Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
You're listening to a BGE podcast.
Friends and family gather round and fire up the barbecue. Let the smoke waft and float, that's what we're gonna do. You can't deny there's nothing like friends and family and food. Don't sit still, pull out your grill, we're gonna have a barbecue.
It's time for another episode of the Blind Grilling Experience. We're going to be talking about a cool little adjustment to a recipe for some brownies that are amazing. And we're going to talk about reverse searing, what it's all about and why we do it.
If you're looking, you ain't cooking. Fire up the barbecue. Fire up the barbecue.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Blind Grilling Experience. My name is Chris Peltz. I am the most interesting griller in the world. And joining me today, right here in studio, I am happy to introduce Mr. Vince Sobers. Brother, how you doing?
Chris, I'd be hard-pressed to find anything to complain about, man.
Yeah,
good. Keeping it churning.
Yeah,
how are you?
Man. Awesome, because I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, you know what? I mean, this life is good. Life is good.
Sure is. So
we've got to hang out, go to lunch together. You and your wife, myself and my wife, and
yeah, that was nice. We don't get out a lot, especially with other adults.
Yeah, yeah. You got your kids are with grandparents. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. That's
yeah. We just got the twins with us right now. So. As hard as we try, you know, they're still slowing us down.
So. Right. Poor Zaba, man.
I know it.
And she's got all summer to get through, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. She's got a good attitude about it right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, hey, man, it's blessed. You know, you're blessed, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Man, awesome. I mean, yeah, there's been no complaints about having twins.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are more nervous than we are, but
yeah, right. I know it's. I'm one of them.
Yeah, you know, you have a few kids, and then people just stop getting excited when you have more kids. You know,
yeah.
Your first kid, oh, congratulations, yeah, guys! Yeah. You just and second kid, and you know, by the fourth, fifth kid, you guys sure?
Yeah. What? More? Another yeah. one? You know what causes that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
That's why I'm so good at it, Chris.
Oh, man. I tell you what, that's it is, you know, kids are a blessing. I mean, even the Bible says, yeah, that you know, blessed is a man whose quiver is full. And, dude, your quiver's it's getting full, dude.
Yeah.
So, that's
I know.
Awesome.
When you got to upgrade from a minivan.
To a tour bus.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we're reaching capacity, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll, whatever God has in store for us.
Right.
You know, that's fine.
Cool. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot, though, on something else.
All right.
From our last episode. So you went back home after our last episode together, right? We talked about disposable cutting boards. Now, we've gotten some feedback on that a couple of times. Some folks were like, I've never even heard of disposable cutting boards.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the brand that I have is Smoky Mountain Smokers,
mm-hmm.
disposable cutting boards. You have, I think, Cut and Toss.
Yeah.
Cutting boards. But they work the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're disposable, so a little bit flimsy. When you're done, you can roll them up, throw them away. But they've got a little groove all the way around the edges, and so you can fold up the edges, the lip, which you did not.
You
know
just
last
want to
time.
Laugh at me
I
again,
did.
Chris?
No. So you went home and you double checked, and yours has it.
Yes,
right?
it has it.
All right. And so you used it, and you folded up the edges, and you found that it worked very well.
It does, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It makes a little box that you. I mean, it's kind of like a tray, I guess.
Yeah.
Contains everything. No, Sometimes though, if it's a big piece of meat, I kind of like the surface area. I don't know, but sure. I don't have that much experience with it yet. I think I've only used them a couple times since then. So
yeah, I got you. All right, cool. Yeah. So, but I mean, that's, you know, it's great though. It collects all the juice. You know, mm-hmm. it's awesome. That's yeah. cool. All right, so, but I know I didn't say the brand last time that we were on because I didn't know what brand I had when we said what you were using, but what I've got at the grilling store, or the Smoky Mountain Smokers is the brand of disposable cutting boards, and yeah, man, they're just, we love them. They're great. I think a must-have in the kitchen, whether you're grilling or just doing stuff inside. They just make easy cleanup and just roll them up, throw them away. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, easy cleanup. I mean, that's
all about very, that.
Yeah,
yeah. That's right. Your wife is happy.
Yeah,
you
know? Sure. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I want to talk about reverse searing. On today's program. And then I want to give a recipe as well for, or a modification of a recipe for brownies. So don't let me forget that. All right. Okay. So don't let me forget to talk about the brownies.
At the beginning of the show, you can't forget it.
Yeah. So we'll get there, but we're not going to do that first. First, I want to talk about reverse searing and what exactly that is, because there's lots of methods when it comes to cooking steaks, both inside on the stovetop in the oven and at the grill. And a lot of times people think of searing the meat first and foremost. And in fact, on our YouTube channel, Blind Grilling YouTube channel, I've got an episode that where we did an indoor cook with some fillets, where once we got them seasoned up, we got our skillet, cast iron skillet, on the stovetop, just searing hot, got some butter in there, and we put the fillets down for about a minute and a half each side, and then we had our oven preheated to 350 degrees, and we took out we grabbed the skillet with a heat resistant glove after searing both sides, and then we stuck it in the oven to let it finish for about 10 minutes maybe. Sometimes it didn't take that long. Sometimes, you know, a few minutes more, depending on who, you know, how well done they want their steak. Now, first of all, this is not reverse searing. That's not what we're talking about right now. No. That's just one method. And that's usually what people think of is sear it off and then let it finish. And that's one way people will do it in the egg as well. My first experience on the grill in the Big Green Egg, my brother had shown me that, he would sear the steaks, get the grill, you know, say 500 degrees, sear both sides of your meat for, you know, a minute and a half each side, and then leave the steaks in there, but shut down the vents completely, shut the egg down completely, and just let it die down, just the residual heat, you know, finish cooking the steak.
That's a little hot.
It cools. It works. It works.
Yeah. Hmm. What's he get? Medium?
Yeah, well, no, medium rare, because you got to think, when just because you sear it, right, you're searing it so quick, your steak is still less than 100 degrees internal temp.
I mean, it depends on the thickness.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're usually doing pretty thick steaks.
You go 2-inch thick, then sure.
Yeah, well, you inch and a quarter, inch and a half. Yeah. Is probably about what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was kind of a traditional method that a lot of folks would use, I think.
Yeah.
And now again, you shut the grill down and you let it go for a little while, and then you come back after, you know, 5 minutes or so, and usually they've figured out how long to let it go for their steak to reach their temp, or they're using a probe that allows them to monitor that meat.
Mm-hmm.
But the reverse sear is you know, flipping that, the opposite of that, right? So the sear comes at the end. So the reverse sear is when you're going to smoke the meat low and slow and bring it to the temperature that you're just about looking for, mm-hmm. right? And so...
Yeah, maybe, I mean, not 20 almost. Degrees less, maybe 15 degrees less.
Do you do that less?
Well, I don't know. No, probably not that much. But yeah, I guess it depends. Sometimes I really want that crust on the outside That can be a little harder to get when you're, you've already been smoking it. I mean, you could reapply some spices or something, but.
Well, I'll give you a tip for that as we go through this in just a minute. Mm-hmm. But let's first of all, let's say, you know, we're looking for that smoke, right? We want that smokiness and that flavor that we're going to get from the charcoal. So let's put it in, let's say at 250 degrees, we put the steak on. Or tri-tip, right? This works with tri-tip. It works with ribeye. It works with filet. You can do a whole center cut tenderloin, you know, and you can do this with pork. You can do this with a pork loin. You can do this with a pork pork chops. The temperatures are going to be completely different, right? Because with pork, you want you're looking for to get over 140 degrees internal temp. But with steaks and tri-tip, you know, for most of us, we're wanting that medium rare. And so what is your go-to when it comes to tri-tip, for example? What's your temp?
Anywhere between 120 and 130. I mean, I like it rare. My kids don't tend to like it as rare as I do. Well, I'm sorry. I'll pull it from smoking at around those temperatures and then give it a quick sear. Usually I'll give it a quick sear. Like the last time I made one, I think I cooked it a little more than I tend to like it, but, I think I pulled it about 130, 135, like, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it's a little more medium. Yeah.
It was, and that's not really how I tend to like it, but, I don't know. I my goal was to just, render it as much as possible, I guess, for the kids. Yeah.
And of course, I mean, this isn't the intent. I think we mentioned on last week's program when we talked to Mikey K about the differences of tri-tip, where you can go and do it like a brisket if you wanted to.
Yeah, in that case, I'd probably 190.
Yeah. Usually. So you're taking it way high. But as far as, you know, when you want tri-tip, where you're going to do it like a steak or you're doing steak, there's always some carryover rise in temperature. So if you pull it, let's say at 120, and you let it rest, it's going to carry over and come up to about 125. Mm-hmm. If you pull it at 130, it's going to carry over, right, and pull it off the grill. It's going to carry over, you know, the general rule of thumb is 5 degrees. Sometimes it's a degree or two less, sometimes, you know, more. But for the most part, you can figure on about 5 degrees carryover temp. And so let's say you pull it at 123, okay, you know, you got your probe in, you're keeping track of your steak, your tri-tip, whatever cut of meat you're looking for. And let's say you want an internal temp of 128. Well, you know, let's say you pull it at 123 and there's going to be a little bit of residual heat rise, you know, that carryover. So it'll come up to about 128 while it's resting. In the meantime, you're getting your temperature hot, right? You're really trying to raise that temperature. Adjust my mic. We need to really adjust, raise that temperature, and not only get it hot for a sear, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, now you're basically at your done temp, so your searing is now to get the crust on the outside, not so much to cook the meat anymore. You're wanting that crust, that nice mark, or you know that little bit different of a texture that sear can give you. And for that, usually people are bumping their grills up to 500 degrees or more. Some folks, you know, sometimes like myself, I'll actually fire up the griddle and sear on the griddle. And rather than grill marks, you know, just have the entire thing. Or in a cast iron skillet, you know, you can put a cast iron skillet in the grill and get it hot and do it on a cast iron skillet. You been doing when you, after you pull it off, before you sear it, what are you doing?
Before I sear it?
Yeah, to get it ready. What do you do to get it ready to sear?
If I, typically I'll pull it off, set it on a tray off to the side, maybe loosely cover that with foil. Mm-hmm. I mean, mostly that's just to, you know, keep anything out of it. I'll pull the basket out. Sometimes I'll just pull the ceramic convector out, so it's direct heat, and just throw either throw the grates on the bottom, you know, the fire ring, or put them on the bottom of the basket, the half moon grates.
Just get them as close to the fire as you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I just, you know, I just throw that steak on there, and sear it. That's this is more often than not. I'd say I tend to mess up steaks at this part of the process because I can't see how the sear is going to know. You know, I like to try to get those grill marks and all the stupid superficial stuff that you don't really need to do.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But I don't know. I like to try, but I can't see it. So it's not really, I wind up, you know, leaving it on too long probably, or just not noticing where my coals are the hottest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it'll be, just too close to the fire or
something. Yeah, sure.
Just getting more cooked than I want it to be. So I have, you know, often I'll just take it inside and sear on a cast iron, and I really like doing it that way. I think it tends to turn out better, but I don't know. Sometimes I just want that charcoal flavor on them. So
yeah, well, I mean, if you've reverse seared and you get that smokiness and that charcoal going anyway, you're going to have some of that. But yeah, I get it. I get it. Wanting to go ahead and do, you know, finish it everything on the grill.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, especially in the middle of summer, right? It's 90, 95 degrees, 100 degrees outside.
People you are don't doing go inside,
everything they can, right, to avoid turning on their oven or their stovetop inside. And so you try to do it all outside as much as you can. So I definitely get that. But, you know, there's a couple of things that you can do that will help you with that crust, with that. Those sear marks. Now, there are items you can get, such as the brand grill grates.
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen those, and I know a lot of people are using them recently. But man, that's pretty hefty price just to get some.
They come with a cost, but I'm gonna tell you, a lot of folks. The reason they are so popular and they use them is, first of all, because they work. I mean, it's amazing how well they work. But also, you know, they use them in steak competitions because they're judged by those marks, right? Whether you have the square pattern or the diamond pattern, you know, that people are looking for, they use those grill grate brand grill grates, you know, the which are like this aluminum material that accentuates the heat to a... I mean, it's unbelievable how much hotter they get than your regular cooking surface, cooking grates.
I know there's a video out there somewhere where they, I think they test the temperature at the grate level, and I, if I'm not mistaken, at least this is what I've gotten from the Big Green Egg community. If you just have a stock Big Green Egg, your temperature at the grate. Because some people actually use pit tree, pro trees for their pit thermometers instead of clipping to the thermometer, the dome thermometer. But the temperature at the grate is going to be actually a little bit lower than the temperature at the top of the dome because of the way the heat is moving through there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's only, I don't know if that's.
Yeah, but the grill grates, though, are going to change
that. Yeah, the grill grates are actually, I forget what they, how much they add, but it might be like a 50-degree difference or something like that.
It can be as much as 150.
Can it really?
Yeah, okay. It's generally 100, but it's not the air temperature around it. What the temperature that they're measuring on those grill grates are the surface temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to use one of those IR, you know, instant, or those infrared thermometers, and those that aluminum grate that they're cooking on now, I mean, it's 100 degrees or more than what you're sitting at, which is why they're so popular for pellet grills. Because the biggest complaint about a pellet grill is, I can't sear on it. And, you know, you get these grill grates and you put those in a pellet grill and you set your pellet grill to 500 degrees and you're like, that's the max I can get. I can't get any more out of it. Well, you know, those things start absorbing all that heat, and all of a sudden, you've got a surface temperature of 600 degrees that you're searing steaks on, and people are just amazed at the difference that makes. So grill grates is one way you can do it, but it's not the only way, or not the way you have to do it. They make it easy, they're convenient, And what's cool about them is you can flip them upside down, and not only do you have the raised part, but if you flip it upside down, it's flat, so you can do either like a smash burger or use it like a griddle, and you can sear the almost like in a cast iron skillet where you're getting the entire surface of the meat seared, rather than just those marks that go from one side to the other. You know,
do you have grill grates?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know you picked them up.
Oh, I've had them for years.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I didn't know they've been around that long. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've been around a long time.
Now, are they just aluminum, or is it like aluminum?
I don't know.
Combined with something? Okay. Because, well, my experience in the kitchen is that aluminum cookware can be a pain to clean, too. Yeah. I don't know. It's not the most durable stuff. It can be hard to clean.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it makes sense. Are they thin?
Yeah. Not as thin as you would think.
Not prone to damage.
Not flimsy or anything. I mean, they're not going to take 1,000 degrees if you throw them in an egg at 1,000 degrees.
You can actually melt aluminum foil in your egg.
Absolutely. You sure can. And aluminum pans.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You can melt that if you're not careful.
Or I should say evaporate. It's not really like it melts. It just kind of evaporates, and I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Dude, when I could see one of the scariest scenes that I ever saw in a movie was from Raiders of the Lost Ark, at the very end when they open the Ark of the Covenant, and those Germans, their faces started melting.
They're made of aluminum.
Oh man, that haunts me to this day. That's funny. But anyway, but yeah, that definitely can happen. But
I've seen some grill companies have great options that are like a cast aluminum. I wonder if those work as well as a grill grate. Is there something special about the design of a grill grate that, cause if I'm, it's, you have the grill side, you have the,
where they're raised.
Yeah. And then, but there's no slots between them. Right?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. No, there is.
That go all the way through?
No, they don't go all the way through.
Right. So it goes down to...
They help prevent flare-ups, like right? So if you have a real juicy burger and, you know, people complain about, you know, especially someone who's blind or visually impaired, you get those grill grates on there and it's catching the drippings in between those ridges, and it helps prevent a lot of the flare-ups when you're doing a direct cook.
It's like a plancha, kind of, where you would have the...
You always come up with a term that I have no idea.
It's a big green egg product. Plancha?
Plancha?
I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah, I mean...
Speaking English, come on.
Plancha? They make half moons. I have the half moons, actually. One side's a griddle. You flip it over. The other side has the...
a little raised area?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's a little cast iron griddle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Double-sided.
Yeah.
Okay. Dude, plancha is lost on me. I didn't know that. You always educate me. Always educate me. Okay, plancha. All right, cool. It's not quite the same because there are tiny little holes, right? Like at each end or something.
Oh, okay.
A little bit. So it's not exactly the same. And the ridges, they're much higher up, right? And
so there's actually like a drip pan sort of
underneath. Yeah, okay. Sort of. Yeah. And what's really, of course, I'm getting a little sidetracked here because the spatula, right? You can get them where it comes with a spatula, and the spatula is open at the end. So it's almost like it has three or four fingers sticking out and open. So you can slide underneath your food as it sits on the ridges, getting those grill marks. You're not sliding under the food itself. To separate it from the grill grate, the spatula goes in those grooves, gets up underneath your food, and then you lift it straight up.
Do you personally use a spatula?
No.
No? Is it something that, is it hard to tell?
Well, actually, that's easy. Those grill grates make using that spatula a lot easier.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah. For someone who's blind or visually impaired, it really does.
Because you could feel where...
Yeah. The problem is, though, and here's the problem with the grill grates, for me personally. They get so hot, they'll melt your nitrile gloves.
Even the good ones?
Even the good ones.
Okay.
Right. And for example, there's a guy that I know that I met who had grill grates sitting in the back seat of his car, And it was like 95 degrees outside. He went into a store, and when he came out, it looked like someone had dropped a cigarette on his Toyota Corolla cloth seats. He had burned a hole in his seat just from sitting out in his car in the sunshine on a hot summer day. I mean, that's the kind of heat that we're talking about that these things can absorb and you know, reflect, I guess.
Yeah, do they have, I was just thinking that, do they have, I mean, I know you can't see it yourself. Have you ever been told, do they have like a real shiny reflective surface?
I don't know.
Because, I don't know, that would be annoying if they do. Right, I have, right. You know, if I cover the convector in aluminum foil, I, you know, there's typically a shiny side.
Yes, and yeah.
A matte side.
I was going to say,
you can't put the shiny side up in the summertime. It'll blind you.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it'll blind you more.
That's right. I was getting ready to ask, did you know that there was a non-shiny side of the aluminum foil?
I did know that, only because it hurts my eyes.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, real quick. So the reverse sear.
What's the other method?
Yeah. So you get your meat smoked, right? Low and slow. You get that smoky flavor. You bring it up, let's say, to 123. And then what you're going to do is I recommend pat it dry just a little bit with a paper towel. Okay. You can always add some more seasoning. But that sear, part of what's going to make a great sear is going to be dependent upon the seasoning that you use. Right, because there are some seasonings that aren't going to sear as well. Obviously, pepper is going to do great. Espresso powder is going to do great. Sometimes, like the paprika, you know, can do pretty good.
What's your favorite steak seasoning?
My favorite steak seasoning, Cosmo. Cosmo has cow cover, I think.
Really?
There's Cow Cover or Cash Cow. One of them is Cosmo and one of them is the other. But the one that's Cosmo, I love it. And actually, the great thing about seasoning is you can build flavor. Mm-hmm. So I'll use that as a base. And then there is this one that is a smoky chipotle seasoning that has some espresso in it. And I'll put it on top. And it's by Cattleman's Seasonings. And that'll go on top. And that's been one of my favorites for steak, for brisket. I mean, it's just really good. And then there's another one called DB180 that is a rub company that has a really good steak seasoning that I think does really good.
So. Oh, yeah. Not the poultry one they make, but the...
Yeah, they've got a beef... And then they've got a steak.
Okay.
They've got the poultry. They've got a sweet. They've got different all kinds of different rubs. But the DB180, the steak is really good, no doubt. So,
okay.
You've got rubs like Jess Pryles has hardcore carnivore. I think is her rub season line of seasonings, and she's got one. You know, there's the black. That a lot of folks love because of the color that it gives, especially on a sear. And if you'll look, some of these rubs actually have this edible charcoal that is in some of these rubs. And that helps also, you know, give a real nice coloring and that nice
carbon.
Yeah.
Flavor.
Well, not so much the flavor, but you know, at least the color, you know, that you're looking for when you sear and get that change of texture and stuff.
They're putting all kinds of stuff in rubs these days.
They are. You got to be real careful. And that's what's really cool about last week's episode with Mikey K, because we were able, you know, he talked about, you know, how picky he is about what goes into his rubs. And there's a lot of companies that aren't like that. You've got so many preservatives and so many non-caking things they add into there, and you start reading all the ingredients, and it's like silicone. What?
Yeah,
you know, it's like, right. Are you serious?
Yeah.
What are we putting into our bodies? You know, and
well, that's why I appreciate Lane's Barbecue.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't add anything to, and they're really, you know, they will list every single ingredient
they do
in their rubs, even though legally you can just put spice blend for a lot of the stuff they put in there. And most companies will just put spice blend. You don't see a lot of companies that are willing to list every ingredient. And
right.
I don't know. I've been liking the steak seasoning that they sent me on my birthday, because I don't know if you order from their website, but if you order from their website, yeah, you can join their, whatever it is.
Their email thing.
Like
and,
or All Star or something
Fast
like that.
Fastlane Barbecue. Yeah, Lane's Barbecue.
They'll send you birthday gifts. And awesome. You don't get those?
No, there's a couple of reasons, but, he sends things for our packages that we send out to folks, right? And so mm-hmm. he does so much for us that I try not to ask for anything in addition, even though if he offers it sometimes. So I go on their website and I buy things all the
time.
Sure,
I do that too.
Yeah.
But it's like you put in you make a little account and then you get birthday gifts automatically.
Well,
I don't know. Well, they sent me the steak seasoning. They don't sell it, but I forget what it's called on the bottle, but it's pretty good stuff. It's got the horseradish powder in it, butter powder, powdered butter on your steak right there.
Yeah.
Some garlic. I think it's got thyme in it, and maybe, I don't know. Does it have coffee? I don't think so. I don't know.
That sounds good.
But mainly the horseradish powder and that butter powder are... I don't know. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it does sound good.
Yeah, so I don't know.
And that would go good on a lot of things.
If Ryan Lane listens to this podcast, he should sell that seasoning.
Right.
You know, I would like... It does go good on a lot of things, by the way. Vegetables, anything.
Sure. You know, of course, Lane, if you go to lanesbbq.com, lanesbbq.com, great company, great products, and...
Yeah.
They even had, and I don't know if it'd still be going on now or not, but you know, they're sort of white, which I love. They have a sort of white hot,
yes,
which is a limited run, which is cool.
They've come out with a few sauces in the past year that I haven't tried yet that look pretty good. I mean,
well, you can sign up. I know that, and I've done this before for their like Pitmasters Elite club where, you know, you buy into this, and then at the beginning of the year they start, you know, every so often they send you a new rub, you know, and you're the only one that gets that, you know, in that group. It's not something they're selling, you know, online or anything. It's just, you know, you get that.
Oh, really?
That rub. Yeah. It's pretty, they got a lot of neat little programs like that.
They do. I must miss that. I'll have to look closer for that.
Yeah. It usually happens around October, November. They'll start advertising for the next year where you can sign up and pay, you know, in advance, and then, or somebody gets you it for a gift. And then throughout the year, every once in a while you get a surprise come to your door. There it is. You know, there's a brand new rub that you get to try, and it's pretty neat.
Sounds like it. It's always nice to get those little gifts.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So I'll tell you what, we'll come back and we'll talk about, we'll finish up the reverse sear, and I want to get to that recipe that I was going to talk about as well. KickAshBasket.com for your grilling accessory needs. Check out their baskets for charcoal management, perfect airflow to help you manage the heat, the temperature that you want to cook at. They've got the Kick Ash can for their Kamado style grills that you can make for easy cleanup. When that ash is built up, just pick it up, dump it, put it back in, and you are good to go. As they say, shake that ash and light that fire. All right there for you at Kick Ash Basket's website. Use our link in the description of this podcast, kickashbasket.com, and tell them Blind Grillin sent you. So, Vince, yeah, we're going to, you know, again, kind of move on from the reverse sear. But the idea is smoking it low and slow first, get that in there, and then let it rest for a few minutes, you know, maybe pat it dry. You can reheat it with some seasoning if you want, especially one that is heavy in pepper. You know, that's going to be really good for those marks. And then sear it, whether it's in a cast iron skillet, whether it's on your grill grates, you know, and do it for a minute and a half, depending on how thick the meat is on each side, to really get that nice crust and not overcook it. You know, that's, if you like those marks, you know, make sure you know, what you're going to be putting it on is, it, you know, as hot as you can get it, for, you know, if you can. Definitely. And one more way to sear it, and that is with a torch, right? Sure, I mean, some of us are using torches to light our grills, and you've got the J.J. George grill torch that Kickash Basket sells on their website. Mm-hmm. We've got the grill gun by Grill Blazer, and they've got the sous vide version. So after you've sous vide some meat, you can take it out, pat it dry, and then hit it with that sous vide torch and sear both sides. But that sear, you know, I used to think it was only for appearance, and it's really not. I mean, you don't have to do it, and you can be very pleased with the results, just slow smoking burgers and steaks and other things. But there is something that it does, a little bit of texture, a little bit of flavor that it can help us accentuate depending on the rub that you're using. So I'd give it a go both ways, whether it's, you know, not searing and then with a sear, and practice with it, because first of all, you'll get to eat a lot of great meat.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
The more you practice, right, the more you get to eat, and you'll find out what works for you and what you like to do.
So. Yeah, yeah. Now, I would also the reverse sear method. I would only, you know, I wouldn't say that's for every cut of steak. Would you? I mean, like a filet mignon. You get a filet. I don't think I would.
I do it.
Really, you don't really do. Need to reverse sear a filet. That's such a tender piece of meat. I mean.
Yeah. I get it smoky, and I bring it to about 115 degrees internal temp.
If you're doing it for flavor, sure.
And then I'll sear it. Yeah.
Didn't the reverse sear, though, that method was developed because of tenderness, I think, right?
There's some arguments to be made. You know, I mean, that's one of the biggest arguments to be made for it, especially given that fat time to render down a little bit. So mm-hmm. on the fattier cuts of meat, like your ribeye and things like that, for sure.
And you're not causing the muscle fibers to tense up from the... extreme heat, I guess.
Yeah, and that's part of what that rest does, right? Because your moisture basically runs into the very middle of the meat, everything mm-hmm. kind of, you know, as you're cooking. And then when you rest, it, you know, it's relaxing, the moisture is being redistributed throughout the meat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more fat, you know, the more moisture you're going to have, obviously. Because, yeah, you're right. The filet is very lean, no doubt about it. But sometimes there's a little bit, there's going to be some fat that's going to be in there. But it still works well for that. I mean, you can get thinner cuts like a flat iron steak or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. that I wouldn't necessarily...
you wouldn't reverse sear a flat iron?
I don't think so.
No? Why not?
I don't know. I just haven't done it.
Oh.
I'll have to try it and see.
Well, yeah, I mean, because some of those steaks you want to eat just very rare, and you don't want to have... you don't want to get them too... warm, I guess. But I don't know. Is flat iron one of those? I mean, I've cooked flat iron steaks before. I just can't.
I just grill them. I've just grilled them. When I get a flat iron, I'll just grill it straight up.
Yeah. I guess that's probably, you know, I think I tend to make like carne asada with those.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure. Yeah, that's, I mean, pretty much grilling them just.
Yeah. We're just going to have to talk about different cuts of steak and things and maybe just get a bunch and do different methods. And, you know, so if anybody wants to support us and send us a check, you know, to buy all this meat.
Porter Road or...
there you go. Get a meat
one
sponsor.
One of those online butcher shops if you want.
Yeah. The butcher shop down in Pensacola, Florida. Man, send us some meat.
We'll film it and we'll do a lot of experimenting and they'll get some advertising.
And we'll eat good.
Yeah.
And we will eat good. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Vince, what's one of your favorite desserts, would you say?
Oh, one of my favorite desserts.
Yeah.
I don't know. I make a lot of different desserts. If I'm making desserts, I try not to make them too often. But if I'm making them, I'll go all over the place. My wife always wants something with chocolate, so I tend to incorporate chocolate. You know, those cheesecake dumplings you showed me.
The blueberry cheesecake dumpling. Yeah.
I've made a chocolate version of those before that everyone seemed to like. Favorite though?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I mean, pecan pie.
Oh,
if it's Thanksgiving, no. But I mean, favorite.
Love pecan pie.
Yeah. I mean, my kids are gone for the week. I've been to Andy's a couple times. You can't make that on the egg, though.
Yeah, so. Right, yeah.
I don't know. If it has to be made on the egg.
No, not necessarily on the egg. I just wondering what your favorite dessert is.
I just like dessert.
But, I mean, your wife likes chocolate. All right, so brownies, right?
Yeah,
you
sure.
You love brownies.
Yep.
Yeah. So we've got a method for making brownies that – and listen, you do this with just a box brownie mix. That's the brilliant thing about this, which makes it so awesome. And you can do it inside, right? So we're not even talking about necessarily on the grill. We're just talking about what to do with a brownie mix to make these amazing, gooey, chewy, chocolatey brownies that are just the best you'll ever put in your mouth, right? I mean, your tongue will love you forever, no doubt about it. And it basically requires just taking two boxes of brownie mix and mix them together. Follow the directions, right? So you got one brownie mix and the same brownie mix. You double it up. You mix it up. So you're just doubling the recipe, right? Now, that sounds like, okay, what's different about that? Well, first of all, you don't make it in a bigger pan. Use the same size pan you'd usually make it in. And the key, and here's the secret, right? I'm going to give away my secret to these brownies. Set your oven at 300 degrees and cook them for 1 hour at 300 degrees, right? So you mix it up. If it calls for an egg, you add the egg. You know, so if you're doing two packages, be two eggs. Whatever milk it costs or calls for each package, you know, you add, you mix it all up just like you were making them normally. You put them in your pan, and then I want you to start your oven at 300 degrees, get it preheated, throw it in there for 1 hour. That's all it takes.
I'm hungry, Chris.
It's good. It is so. It's amazing the difference that makes at the low temperature for extended period of time, doubling the recipe.
Do you know why?
No, I don't know. It works. Dude, I'm not a scientist.
No.
Right? But this isn't rocket science.
No.
This is just a matter of trying it and saying,
that's good.
Thank you, blind grilling. Because it works.
It really sounds does good.
Work. Oh, yeah, it does. Man, we got our mowers. I've got a mower in the backyard. Yeah. Man, wouldn't you know it? They come when we're recording. That's all right.
I don't know. I thought you mowed your own lawn, Chris.
Well, you know, I used to. I tried one time.
Did you really?
When Michelle and I first got married, I mowed the yard, and she came home from work one day, and she said, hey, thanks for trying to mow the yard.
Oh.
And I was like, well, how do you know I didn't hire one of these kids down the street to mow it? She goes, because I can see the great big old strips that you missed.
Yeah, you know when I stopped mowing lawns? When I moved to Missouri.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, walk back, and, you know, first off, there's hills everywhere. Yeah. Our lawn was on a hill, and
the hills
first time
are
I pushed a mower around in that
but they're killing the vents
in that yard in 95 degree heat for a couple hours. I thought, well, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, they got right up against the window there. I guess
they did. Did my mic cut out, or did you?
No, it was me. I was trying to mute out a little bit of it. So
all right.
That's all good. You know, this is how we roll.
Yeah.
Folks get the real deal on these podcasts. Unedited. That's right, man.
If you want those brownies, you're going to endure the noise.
That's right. Here, I'm giving my secret recipe, and then the noise overtakes everything, and everyone's like, what? What was it? What did he say?
I think we came in louder than the mower noise.
Yeah, probably.
It's probably annoying if you're wearing headphones.
So. Yeah. So
you just need a recording light out there outside your house, just a red light that comes on. Tell them not to mow if the light's on.
Avoid the backyard. Well, you know, my wife had broke a bone in her foot, and it was just real difficult for her to get out there and mow. And so I got a guy who's like, all right, just come and, you know, take care of it. That's been a little over a month ago. And
yeah,
he's been doing it ever since. So
it helps.
It does. She's got enough on her plate. I ask her to do enough plus work and everything. So
yeah. It's
all good. But anyway, well, folks, I appreciate everybody tuning in, listening to the Blind Grilling Experience, and welcome once again to all of our Audio Information Network of Colorado listeners. We appreciate you all as well. Our email address is blindgrilling@gmail.com. Vince, man, thanks again. Always love having you in studio with me.
Thank you, Chris. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. We'll do some experimental cooks and get back here and share them with folks and see.
I would love to.
If
you guys got steaks here.
Yeah, that's all right. Get those steaks here. You guys got a cook or something you want us to talk about specifically? Maybe a technique or something you want us to go over and see, you know, how it is we might recommend doing it or how we've done it? Or maybe you can tell us how we should be doing it. Shoot us an email, blindgrilling@gmail.com. That's how you get in touch with us, folks. Again, thanks for listening. Share it out with all your friends. Let them know about the Blind Grilling Experience and all the podcast apps and the AIN Colorado Network. Until next time, remember, if you're looking, don't sit still, you ain't cooking.
We're going to have a barbecue. It keeps us together when life wants to tear us apart. Barbecue, no matter the weather, under the sun or the stars. Fire is burning, the world keeps turning. Don't worry what you gotta do. 'Cause if you're looking, you ain't cooking. Fire up the barbecue. Fire up the barbecue.
Hello and welcome to the Insights and Soundbites podcast, where people facing vision loss share insights about what has helped them cope and adjust. My name is Douglas Walker. Today we'll hear from Dory. Dory will share with us how just one small device can make a really big difference.
My name is Dory Rush, and I am from New York. I have Stargardt disease and have lived with progressive vision loss for more than 30 years. There is one device that plays a major role in every single day in so many ways for me, and that is the smartphone. The smartphone of my choice is the iPhone. From the beginning, I learned to use VoiceOver, the screen reader, so everything on the screen is read to me, which takes a lot of the stress out of, you know, trying to decipher or magnify everything on such a small screen. I also use Siri to the maximum of my ability, which is very helpful because obviously in many ways the voice assistant makes verbal commands, voice commands easier to accomplish. I also, of course, use the clock. Very difficult finding out what time it is when you have difficulty seeing. I use reminders a great deal, just things that I need to remember at a certain time. And I also am an incessant list maker, so I have a lot of lists. I love checking the weather. It's always nice to know what's happening in the weather. I use Seeing AI, the app from Microsoft, to read signs, to read documents, and to read product barcodes, which is helpful when you're shopping or when you're cooking dinner. And right now, I'm using voice memos to record this. It sounds like a lot, but I learned one app at a time, very patiently, and with a lot of help from Hadley's workshops, which are the best. So I can't imagine functioning without a smartphone. It is the gift that keeps giving.
Was there something that someone said to you or something that happened along the way that made all the difference in the world in helping you adjust to living with vision loss? We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to share with us, just leave us a message on our Insights and Soundbites voicemail by calling 847-512-4867. Or you can use your smartphone or computer and email us a recording to podcast@hadleyhelps.org. Again, my name is Douglas Walker. Take care, and I'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.